road fatalities in the United States hit a 15-year high in the first half of 2021. The National Highway Traffic and Safety Administration has said in the past that 94% of traffic crashes are the result of human error. But our next guest says that number doesn't tell the whole story. Road design and the design of cars themselves also play a role in the lead up to a crash and can offer new ways to rethink traffic safety. We're exploring how we can make driving safer for everyone, drivers and cyclists and pedestrians. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have dangerous roadways in your community? What makes them dangerous? How would you make roads and highways safer? Or do you blame the drivers themselves in most cases? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. David Zipper is a visiting fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School. He wrote a piece for The Atlantic called The Deadly Myth That Human Error Causes Most Car Crashes. David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
In that piece, you mentioned this 94% number bounces around a lot. Can you tell us, first of all, where that comes from?
Well, it actually comes from our federal government, from NHTSA, which is the road safety agency that's part of the Department of Transportation. And 7 years ago, NHTSA put out a document that was very technical and had lots of caveats, but said that basically the final event that leads to a crash or the final contributing factor is all, in 94% of the time is human error. And of course, there's lots of other stuff that happens before that final contributing factor, but 94% of the time in the end, somebody makes a mistake and that leads to the crash. And you know, as soon as that paper came out, car companies and state departments of transportation and much of the traffic safety community just ran with it and simplified it down to simply 94% of crashes are due to people making mistakes on the road.
What does that leave behind, both in that actual report that said, hey, yeah, that's just the final cause, there's other stuff, and in the way it ends up being talked about in the media and elsewhere?
A lot, honestly. And I think maybe the best way to explain it is to give a quick example, if I could.
Sure.
So if you imagine, if you would, say a person driving an SUV in an urban area strikes a pedestrian, and the SUV driver was speeding and the pedestrian was not at a crosswalk. Now, the police could simply say, okay, well, that was due to human error. The pedestrian shouldn't have been crossing where there wasn't a crosswalk and the driver was speeding. Case closed. But honestly, but here's some other things. What if that SUV had pedestrian detection equipment? What if that had been an SUV at all? What if it had been a sedan, which is a lot less dangerous to pedestrians and to cyclists as well, by the way, who are dying with increasing frequency on our roads? What if the road had been designed differently so that it was narrower, which naturally leads a driver to slow down instead of driving, in this case, above the speed limit? And for that matter, what if the nearest crosswalk was half a mile away and the pedestrian didn't want to walk that far out of her way? Like, these are all contributing factors that are due to how cars are designed and how roads are designed and streets are designed that can lead to crashes that really are the responsibility, in my view, of car companies and our road engineers. And they go beyond the responsibilities of the driver and the pedestrian, who may actually be the ones who are the people you actually see at the site of the crash when it's investigated.
With the focus on driver error, I think we've all seen in our lives many PSAs and other efforts to educate us as to how to be good drivers. And that's important, sure. But do you think that misleading stat that so much of this is caused purely by driver error is funneling our resources, our thoughts away from some of these more fundamental solutions you're talking about?
I do. It's not that drivers don't make mistakes or that we can't hurt or kill someone when we're behind the wheel. That certainly is a real issue. But if we focus all of our efforts on that, it really skews how we spend money and how we allocate resources as we're thinking about traffic safety. We could be doing a lot of things differently in terms of how we design roads, how we think about regulating cars at the federal level that we just omit as a society, and our government officials don't talk about because we're so focused on these education campaigns, which, by the way, Rob, have not been shown to be very effective when you have these millions of dollars spent across the country on publicity campaigns to encourage pedestrians and drivers to watch out. Like my favorite example is one in Colorado, actually, where the Colorado Department of Transportation paid people to walk around in giant eyeball suits to tell pedestrians to look more carefully. There's no evidence that that does anything, but we still keep pouring taxpayer dollars into efforts like that.
Talking to David Zipper about roadway safety, he says we need to focus on a lot more than just driver error, even though that's often chalked up as a main cause of collisions. He says road design, car design are big pieces of the puzzle. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can follow David's work on Twitter at David Zipper. Let's get into some of the specifics you're talking about now, starting with road design in an urban setting. We know we've seen this is part of the story of increased road fatalities, larger cities, reckless driving, high speed driving. What kind of design solutions would you point local planners toward?
Sure. Well, here's a basic one. How about sidewalks and having complete sidewalk networks? Pedestrian fatalities are rising sharply in the U.S. while they're falling in East Asia and in the European Union. And I think a big part of the problem in the United States is that we underfund sidewalks. We often leave that to be the responsibility of local governments or to abutting property holders, which forces people who are vulnerable compared to those inside a two-ton automobile to be just walking on literally the side of the street or the road. I'd point to that. I would point to, and there's an effort called Complete Streets that I know cities like Milwaukee and Madison have embraced, where that you basically do things like road diets. You make the streets be a little bit narrower to encourage drivers to go a little bit slower. And you can add technologies called leading pedestrian indicators that let pedestrians walk out a little bit across an intersection a little bit before the light changes for drivers to give them a better chance of being visible. Those are just a couple of the street design efforts that I think can be very effective. Now, we talk about how cars are designed. That's really more of a federal issue, and that's something where we need Congress and the Department of Transportation to take a more active approach.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Kevin is with us in Madison. Kevin, hi.
Good afternoon. Just a couple of comments. My wife drives a Acura MDX, and it's got so many safety features, it makes it more dangerous to drive. So I'm not in favor of enhancing safety features in cars any farther than we've already gone. And my second point is, we have a lot of road fatalities here in Madison, pedestrian fatalities and car accidents, car fatalities, because people speed excessively. We don't have enough police. That's the biggest problem in most communities. That's how you get people to obey the laws, is you enforce them.
Kevin, before you hang up, Kevin, I want to ask, what do you mean, what safety features in the car do you think make things less safe? I want to make sure we understand what you're saying.
Well, there's a braking for this, for example, this thing. I can't remember what it's called, but it's a braking feature. So if you pull up to a stop sign and I'm not unreasonably close to a car, it'll actually lock up the brakes on you. I've actually had a light turn green before and my brakes have locked up, because the guy in front of me slows down, and I almost get rear-ended.
Gotcha. Kevin, thanks for the call, and thanks for clarifying that. First of all, David, do you see, misguided safety features sometimes in cars?
Well, there's really no standards at the federal level about how high quality these automatic braking and features like that need to be. So you end up with some car models, and I don't know what model this caller has this at the moment. I can't recall that right now. Some are higher quality than others. So having more guidance from at the federal level would be certainly helpful. But I would also note that, to be honest, the safety features or a driver's decision to purchase safety features in his car or her car has an impact on more than himself, herself, and her family or his family. It's also going to have an impact on people outside the car. And that's actually a huge problem, because most drivers, you heard the caller just now saying he didn't really like the features in his car. He wished he didn't have them, doesn't want more of them. Well, the problem is that safety features like, for example, pedestrian detection software and hardware actually protects people outside the car. So it's not actually just for his benefit that those features would be included, it's actually for the benefit of vulnerable road users. And that's where you really need regulations to step in to, in my view, make sure that those features are widespread, even if drivers themselves don't want it, because society writ large actually benefits.
And then to his second point, the solution for speeding, he says, is more speeding enforcement.
Well, I would offer, I would say maybe. I think that many people in minority communities would say that's going to impact them disproportionately. What actually might be there's a couple simpler options I might throw out there, Rob. One is simply installing speed governors on cars so that is there really a reason to be able to drive faster than, say, 80 miles an hour? I'm not sure there is. And yet automobiles sold in this country generally are all able to do so. So that's one way to fix things, at least on highways and interstates. Another is installing speed cameras so that you know you're going to get a fine, or the likelihood is quite high, and it's going to be done pretty fairly by technology in potentially dangerous intersections. Now, drivers don't always like either of those solutions, but they have both been shown to have tremendous impacts on safety that are beneficial for society again.
Talking to David Zipper, visiting fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School's Taubman Center for State and Local Government, with us today talking about how to make our roads and highways safer for drivers and their passengers, also cyclists and pedestrians. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have that road, that intersection in your community that seems unsafe just by design? Have you seen changes in your local community that you think are making things better or making things worse? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're continuing our conversation with David Zipper. He wrote a piece for The Atlantic about who and what's to blame for traffic crashes and fatalities. Says there's a lot of focus on the individual drivers, not enough focus on road design, systemic solutions that could prevent a lot of these problems. You could join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. This is an issue in the city of Milwaukee lately, trying to address an issue with reckless driving. New interim mayor Cavalier Johnson says it's his top priority. He outlined a plan in a press conference earlier this week.
My administration will engage in a comprehensive effort to increase the deployment of physical road improvements, strategies and technologies to hold drivers accountable, and public education to improve road safety and curb reckless driving in the city of Milwaukee.
I want to ask about the reckless driving part of this. There have been reports in Milwaukee and elsewhere about, David, increases in reckless driving. We've become worse drivers, apparently, during the pandemic. Do you see numbers bearing that out?
Yeah, there was a tremendous spike in this country in road fatalities when the pandemic began. We actually saw, you mentioned at the top of our conversation, that 20,000 people died on American roads and streets and highways in the first 6 months of this year, the most in 15 years. That's after a 10% increase over the last 10 years and a spike the year before. So it does, it seems that with fewer people driving due to the pandemic, there are more open roads and people are speeding more. And there's some anecdotal evidence that people are also driving more recklessly without, for example, wearing seatbelts as much, although we still have to see that. But one thing I think is really interesting, Rob, is this is actually really an American phenomenon. If you look at statistics of other countries around the world, New Zealand, Canada, Europe, everywhere else except the United States and Switzerland, weirdly, road fatalities dropped substantially over the last 18 months. But for some reason, the United States is going the wrong way. And to me, that's further evidence that we really need to really rethink how we approach road safety in this country and look for some new solutions.
Let's go back to our callers now. Anita is with us in Libertyville, Illinois. Anita, hi.
Hi. This is really interesting and really well needed. But I just have a comment, and that is that it seems everywhere we go that the only thing the cops pull you over for is speeding. You know, we see a lot of other things. We see people not using the turn signal. We see people that are driving in a clearly marked turn-only lane, and then they shoot ahead of the traffic that's been waiting in the legitimate straight-ahead lane, and it causes road rage when the guy from the turn lane that cheated needs to pull in front of everybody else. I mean, it's stuff like this. People that are texting in the car, people that are using their handheld phone in the car. And I've had the police tell me in a most friendly way when I asked about that, that they cannot take a hold of the person's cell phone and ask to see it because the person owns that phone.
Anita, thanks for the call. David, do you see needs for improvement, either enforcement or other solutions for those non-speeding infractions that Anita's talking about?
Yeah, I think Anita's making some good points. Distraction is a huge problem, whether it's from cell phones or from our increasingly complicated onboard infotainment systems. There's going to need to be, I think, a reckoning around these technologies because we don't even fully know how dangerous they are. But all the data that we have seen thus far, the anecdotal evidence at least, suggests that it's a big contributor to the growth in crashes that we've seen in the U.S. over the last 15 years. It's been pretty steady. And one, if I could throw it out there, an interesting off on the horizon, but not that far away, solution from technology are known as driver monitoring systems, cameras and sensors that can keep an eye on the driver's attention and eyes on the road and can take action, giving a warning or even potentially halting the vehicle if you're not paying full attention. Tesla and certain high-end Cadillac cars already have technologies like this. And in the infrastructure bill that was just passed by Congress, there is a mandate that our Department of Transportation investigate solutions here. So expect to hear more about this as a driver monitoring system approach as a way to potentially address distraction in the years to come.
Thanks for the call, Anita. We'll go to Jeff next in Eau Claire. Jeff, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Jeff?
Yeah, well, I've been in law enforcement. I've just retired 35 years with the State Patrol. And there's four categories that we routinely see and we focus on. And that's speed, have you been mentioning, operating under the influence, fatigue driving, and of course, everybody noted the distracted driving. The caveat to all this is that we really can't police our way out of it, as your guest attests to. There's got to be other things, and other countries are looking at, of course, higher, moving these violations to different levels from the civil aspect to criminal. Insurance companies need to get involved, but again, we can't police our way out of it. And the lady that called about turn lanes and all that, absolutely, but we just don't have enough officers to focus on all that. It really comes down to people, individual drivers, taking responsibility for their actions. That's why your insurance rates go up. That's why hospital costs go up, and the list goes on and on. And it's a great topic, and there's certainly a lot of layers and facets to this.
Jeff,
thank you.
Thanks for the call. Congrats on your retirement. David, one thing you said there, insurance companies maybe need to be more proactive if local and state governments aren't.
Yeah, well, they certainly could be helpful, I think, on the lobbying for some of these changes, in particular to road design. But I really appreciate Jeff's point. I think he's right that we can't police our way out of this crisis. And he's right again that we can look abroad for solutions. And, one thing I think is particularly interesting to listeners who might be wanting to learn more, there is a program that was actually born in Sweden called Vision Zero, born about 20, 25 years ago, that has as its premise the idea that human beings are going to make mistakes behind the wheel, but you shouldn't have to die for that. And that's why whenever there's a crash with Vision Zero starting in Sweden, investigators would go and look what led to the crash. Are there ways of creating more forgiving infrastructure, ways to mitigate the danger of a collision occurring and the severity of the injury or likelihood of death if something does occur? Now, Vision Zero has spread over the last 25 years throughout Europe and to the U.S., but I think that we could do much, much more with that kind of a systemic approach. And Europe has a lot to teach us about this. Because, by the way, European death rates are on roads are less than half what we have in the USA right now. And Europe has a population one third larger. That should give us pause.
Yeah, reading your piece, it made me think of I've talked to people who investigate air crashes, and they might say, yeah, pilot error was part of it. And that would never be the end of the conversation. It would be, how do we account for the risk of this pilot error and make sure people don't die as a result? Do we need to switch to more of that kind of mindset as we investigate road fatalities?
Well, Rob, that's a very astute observation that you just made. You're exactly right. We have the National Transportation Safety Board that looks at all possible contributing factors when there is an air collision, because it's so important to understand all this, all the possible elements that went into it. But when a car crash leads to an injury or a death, we usually have a police report that assigns responsibility to one party, two, or none at all, and we just move on. And that is something that does need to change, in my view. And we're just starting, I think, in this country to think about what that could look like. And for those who are curious, I would point to New York City as a possible model, because earlier this year, New York City officially began shifting responsibility for traffic investigations away from the police toward the Department of Transportation, which in officials' view, and my own as well, are better equipped to look at these sorts of infrastructure or vehicle design systemic problems, in addition to saying, okay, this person was driving drunk or this person was speeding unnecessarily. They're going a little bit deeper than that. And I'll be very interested to see what happens in New York. And perhaps it could hold lessons for other parts of the country as well.
David, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
David Zipper is a visiting fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School. He writes about transportation and urban innovation for outlets including The Atlantic, The Washington Post, and Bloomberg's City Lab. He's with us today talking about the causes of traffic crashes and how to make roads safer. Still time for you to share your thoughts on the Ideas Network Facebook page.